Hello, my Cinnabar Moths, or any kind of moth you'd like to be. Today we are here with Lise Russell, author of the comic Sentience and the short stories Pan and Prism, both of which are included in our winter anthology A Cold Christmas and The Darkest of Winters. Lise, welcome to the Writer's Triangle. It's a pleasure to have you today. How are you doing?
Great, how are you?
I'm doing quite well, and I'm excited to be interviewing today.
Thanks, I'm excited too.
Happy to have you. And so today, what we're going to be talking about is a topic that I find very interesting, and I hope our listeners find it interesting as well, is the concept of show and don't tell. It's something that's talked about a lot, but is rarely truly explained in writing. And so we asked Elise to join us today because something that we feel that she does masterfully, and I'd like to demonstrate that with just reading a line from the short story Prisms as an example. So here it is. Wren rang the doorbell again and listened to it echo through the 100-year-old house. So this one line for me, it transports me to an old decrepit building, it's empty, and the doorbell ringing echoes throughout the entire house. And for me, this is an example of the showing and not telling by not telling me how to feel or think about the house, or even creating all the imagery for it, and leaving room for me to explore it myself. And that to me is kind of the essence of show and not tell. For you, Elise, what would you say is the essence of show and not tell, and how do you do it so well?
Well, I mean, it's one of the first things they tell you in any writing class. But to me, show, don't tell is more about feeling. Writing teaches empathy. I say that frequently, but it's about showing what you're feeling. Tell me what you're feeling so that I can feel it too. Mm-hmm. So it's really about why do we tell stories? We tell stories to have someone feel something they've never felt before. Mm. So you can pretend you're trying to describe an emotion that someone's never heard of, never felt. And if you just tell them, I'm sad, it's not going to make an impact. Right. You have to lead them to it and make them feel it themselves. Mm. So that line, I've always been very interested in having surroundings architecture reflect the inner state of the characters. Ever since I read The Fall of the House of Usher, Edgar Allan Poe, and it's the decay and the house is crumbling around them as the family falls apart, and that the character that's inside the house is as empty as the house at that moment. Mm. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. And so for you, you kind of used the setting, or you attempt to use the settings and enjoy using the settings to represent emotional states as well as the characters themselves.
Yes.
And as you say, this process of empathy and showing and leading and kind of breaking down an emotion to somebody that they might not have experienced before, would you say that it came naturally, or did you have to work at it? What's kind of that process for you?
I learned it as I grew older. I mean, I definitely did a lot more telling in my high school writing. But I think as you grow up and you experience more things, it becomes easier to describe them to others. Hmm. So empathy is learned. It's not very, I mean, you can have an inherent tendency toward empathy, but it's definitely a learned skill.
Yeah. And so you'd say for you, your capacity for being able to do this has improved based off of the life experience that you've gained and the experiences of dealing with different people, different situations, and repeatedly experiencing certain emotions, as well as kind of increased the depth of your empathy and your ability to express in your writing?
Definitely. Yeah. Once you, when you see someone going through something and you're paying attention and you see the physical tells, you remember that as a writer who is detail oriented, and you can then use that to describe characters. Like if someone's going through depression and, you know, they just are in a state of not caring, they might have greasy hair because they haven't showered, because they're in a void, or if someone's angry, they might accidentally break something, or I don't know, but it's things they do and the things around them that can really show that to a reader, I think.
And so a key part of that is conveying the not just the characters, but the world around them to the readers. And that's something that I personally have actually struggled with conveying the world of my book, Pixies in the Mist, to the readers, is there's a specific thing in the book called The Mist, and I struggled to really get that across for a while, and I end up having to resort to the four senses and writing my character's sensory experiences as the only method that I could really figure out for myself. But I feel like your writing is a lot more nuanced in that you don't just write the sensory experience when showing and not telling, but you also create these very good, expressive emotional spaces and emotional scenes with them that feel authentic and show the reader how a character is feeling without saying it expressly. And something I want, and as an example that I want to draw from Prisms again, is the line, "She let out a shuddering breath and ran her hand over her face," which I think ties into what you're just talking about with the kind of physical cues of emotion. And so I wanted to ask you, how do you think of these moments, or how do you create them? Is it purely from just drawing from your experience of what you've seen, or are there other methods that you use?
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong, by the way, with the drawing from the senses to show, not tell. Everybody's got their own methods, and it's what makes it fun to read stories from different people. For me, I'm sorry. Could you ask the question again?
Oh, yeah, no problem. So, you write these very great emotional scenes where you show a character feeling things and use these physical cues and such. And so I was wondering, how do you think of creating these moments, or how do you approach creating them, and what's kind of your process for that?
Well, what's fun about writing is I can control all of it. So the whole world, I can bend it to what I want to show with the character. With responses to things, there's a little bit of acting, I guess, in writing sometimes, where you have to get into character. You have to think about how a different personality would approach something. Like, it might not be how I would react, but this person with these traits would definitely react this way. And it can be even just different aspects of yourself. So, like, a part of me is really snarky. So if I take that part of me and exaggerate it into a character, snarky me would say something that more reserved me would not say.
Right. Okay. And so for you, it's a matter of you take certain attributes and you use those as the kind of a cornerstone for a character's concept?
Yeah, and they can be an amalgamation of just people I've known combined with me, and just random events to create something new.
Okay. And so for that process, you draw from the people you've known, the people you've met, yourself, and things you've witnessed, and all of that, to kind of combine into creating these characters and creating these moments. And how do you, if you were to give advice to our listeners as a sort of crafting tip for this, about accessing these emotional spaces when doing the acting for them and conveying them, do you have any specific tips to be able to kind of get into that mental mode, so to speak?
Don't feel like you have to do it all at once. You can come back to a story when you're in a different mood, if you want to, and you can have different thoughts. And sometimes just you get random ideas throughout the day, you write them down, and you can work on them later. It doesn't have to just, you sit down and you tell the story. The story forms in your head as you're living, I guess.
Okay, so it's, your advice is to let people not kind of lock, don't lock yourself into thinking the story has to be all one way, exactly how you thought of it that one time. Rather, let it be a bit more flexible and live with you, and live with the new ideas or the new headspaces that you end up being in as you go through your day and go through your life.
Yes, you put it far more succinctly than I did. Thank you.
I think that's a helpful tip, and that's something that I've didn't think of, but I have done myself, is coming back to my writing and being like, you know what? This character makes sense to me with how I'm feeling right now. I totally understand how I can write this character's interaction, because I'm in just a different mood, and how I'm looking at the world is just that little bit different, that kind of unlocks it for me.
Yeah.
And so I definitely, you brought to mind something that I realized that I was doing that I didn't realize I was doing. So yeah, I definitely do agree that taking some space can often help with remembering your story, in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's less like, if you sit down and you're like, I have to write this whole story right now, it's going to come out a little bit more robotic. Maybe not. Maybe that's your process. But for me, it's not going to feel as real as if I'm, you know, I've got a random idea for dialogue while I'm doing the dishes or whatever. So I'll write it down back to it. And then I'm really mad, so I come back and I write a really angry character. I don't know.
So it sounds like you have a very kind of throughout the day process for your writing style.
I'm always thinking about it. I write, I lay down at night, and as soon as I close my eyes, I'm like, oh, I've got an idea. So I keep this notebook next to my nightstand, and I just reach over and I just write on it without turning the light on, and then I just have to decipher it in the morning. It's just everywhere, all over itself. So yeah, it's all the time.
Okay, and so you're always in that kind of writer's headspace, so to speak.
Yeah, I can't help it. It's just how my brain's wired. I'm an only child. I was always alone with books and telling stories to myself since I was a little kid. So
I think it's definitely turned out wonderfully, because I, for one, at least, am a big fan of your work, and we at Cinema Moth are fans of your work. And part of what we're a fan of is the... what's that?
That's really weird to hear. I'm still new to this.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to experience this more and more and become more comfortable with having people be fans of your work as you get people reading it.
I have a hard time accepting compliments. I'm just kind of like the, oh, shucks, kind of shuffle your foot around and mumble something. I don't know how to handle this. So hopefully I get a little less awkward with that.
Well, don't worry about it. If you feel a little bit awkward, that's fine. You know, everybody has to go through their own process with, just like with writing, right? You have to go through your process of discovering how you want to deal with or what your process is for dealing with compliments. I personally tend to go with the thank you to the person's face, and then in my head I think, I'm not really that great. So I totally understand not being good at receiving compliments in a way. But going back to the writing thing of, you know, when you're younger, you end up having to kind of create your own worlds, and you did a lot of storytelling to yourself and that kind of imagination and exploring your imagination. And you mentioned earlier about the world being completely under your control. You know, you control every aspect of it. And I wanted to kind of delve into that concept of creating atmosphere. And I want to take an excerpt from Pan, the other short story in the Winter Anthology, and use it as a reference point when talking about atmosphere. So the line is, I love cities, all you can eat, finger licking good, to think some of my kind are scared of the cities. Now, without doing any spoilers for the story itself, you can already tell that this character kind of has a more predatory feel to it, maybe a little bit creepy, and creates this atmosphere for talking about that character with that. And when you start to write a scene, do you know what the atmosphere you want to be is before you go into it? Or is it something that you end up having to kind of revisit over time in your living story process? You just kind of come back to it over and over? What's your process with creating atmosphere?
Well, that story in particular was a bit odd because it was a writing exercise that I created for myself, where I was like, let's see how many different points of view I can have in one story and how different I can make them. So I wanted to have very distinct voices. So I would, that was actually the very first sentence I thought of, not the first sentence of the story at all, but that paragraph was the first paragraph I wrote.
Oh, really?
Because that's the first character that came to me. And I was like, well, that's this thing, but I think I'm going to roll with it. I like creepy stuff. Mm-hmm. So creating atmosphere, it comes in bits and pieces, and it folds around each character. Like I said, I like to have the setting reflect the inner state of each character.
Mm-hmm.
And I use color a lot in my stories as well to represent different things.
Yeah. And so for you, for atmosphere, it's very much, rather than atmosphere being an informant for itself or the world, you'd rather have the world kind of be shaped around the characters, and you have a more kind of character-focused and character-driven writing style, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's the synopsis, and then there's what the story is really about. Mm-hmm. And there's a rare story that I write where I have no underlying message, and I just write it because I think it sounds creepy. But most of them, I have something in mind that I want to convey to a reader. And to make it more understandable, you have to exaggerate it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you go into writing each of these stories with a message of sorts that you want to convey to people, and then you go from there to create the characters that can represent aspects of this message, and then from there you go into the atmosphere that shapes around the characters. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, it's like a BB in a tuna can. A popcorn all over.
Okay. And so for that, you have to also express the characters' personalities is going to be a major part of that then. And with that comes writing dialogue, right? Mm-hmm. And so with writing dialogue, it's very important to be able to clearly understand a character from very little dialogue, because oftentimes we don't get to have long backs and forth in writing without kind of bogging readers down in certain cases. Obviously there's cases where that's not the case, but on average, particularly with short stories, you kind of have to cut it a bit shorter and create that oomph very quickly. And so I want to take an example from Pan that I feel really shows that. and it's this little bit of dialogue that I personally found enjoyable. And it's, well, damn kid, Granny's got way better shit to do in heaven. Why would she hang around this hellhole to haunt your scrawny, myopic ass? Sorry, I'm working on the politeness thing. And this right away conveys to me a very blunt character who's kind of naturally rough around the edges, maybe doesn't really respect the person they're talking to very much. But do you map out this kind of dialogue? How do you like speak to the characters in your mind? What's your process for creating this dialogue for these characters?
There's some characters that will say what I'm actually thinking. You know, in every situation, you react to people as politely as you can, usually. But you really think something else sometimes.
Yeah, like, yeah.
That character was my inner monologue. Which sounds terrible, and now you're going to read that and think I'm messed up, but... each character is a different way of reacting to a different situation. Mm-hmm. And it's not always obviously me. Like, there's like you said, some predatory characters. I'm not thinking that the city is finger looking good. But
right.
It's fun to pretend to look at the world in a different way like that sometimes.
Yeah. And to explore those different perspectives on the world.
Yeah.
And so for you, when you do these dialogues, you kind of choose what filter through which you're viewing the world as your basis for creating them. Would that be correct?
Yeah. I mean, dialogue is my favorite. I love dialogue. I like challenges where you have to write, you know, just a 100-word story, only dialogue. That's fun. When I'm watching TV shows, I'm not really, like, explosions are cool, but I'm really paying attention to the moments where it's just two characters sitting and talking, and then the subtext to what they're saying. Dialogue is fascinating to me.
So you'd say dialogue is, like, far and away your favorite part of the writing process?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the things that people say are... I mean, I wrote a story where the concept was the world is in darkness. You can't see anything. Lights don't work anymore. What would people say to each other in the dark? And what people say and what they really mean. Unreliable narrators, that kind of thing. It's just, words have always had power to me, as cheesy as it sounds.
I don't know. I totally understand that. Especially if you've spent a lot of your life reading. I think that if reading and, you know, words have been part of your life your entire time, it's really easy to feel that connection to how much the way something is said or the way something isn't said can influence your perspectives on the world, your perspectives on how other people's perspectives on the world are, right?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like one of the must-haves in thinking about characters and who they are, is not only what they say in dialogue to each other, but also what they don't say, in order to create this kind of more natural flow in dialogue in a story. And so I wanted to ask you, what's your go-to method when trying to decide on this natural form of dialogue for each character?
I suppose I just picture, I mean, I take away the entire setting and I picture them just sitting in a room together, like a blank white room, and what are they saying? And then you can add in everything else around it. But the words are the most important part.
Hmm. So your process is to strip everything bare, ignore all the other context for now, and just think about face-to-face.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And when people aren't, when someone's not saying something, then the setting can come in and fill in for you.
Right. And that'd be where you do, like, physical actions or parts of the environment can fill that in for you. But yeah. For just when they're speaking, it's very direct for you.
Yes.
Okay.
For prose.
Mm.
For comic writing, it's another story because you have to think about the imagery along with it. But for prose, yes.
Okay. And so you have a completely different process for comic writing.
Yeah.
Okay. And so for any writers out there who might be struggling with writing prose dialogue, or even perhaps comic writing dialogue, if you'd like to go into that a little bit, do you have any advice that you'd like to give?
Read it out loud. You would be surprised how many people you find mistakes as soon as you read it out loud. And I do this for every story. I read it out loud. Quietly, because I would never want my children to hear what I'm writing. But you can find really clunky dialogue, like, oh, that sounds funny when you say it out loud. It sounded okay in my head, but no one would say that. Mm. So reading it out loud, putting it away and coming back to it later. Those would probably be the two quickest tips. Not that I'm, like, a professional master of writing or something. I'm not exactly Margaret Atwood here, but...
No, I think the reading out loud tip is a really, really good one that other authors that I know who I have had the fortune of talking to also agree that reading out loud is probably one of the best ways of figuring things out. And I personally have found that when I don't read things out loud and I read back over my work, there's always something a little bit uncomfortable sometimes. And then it's hard for me to really pinpoint what that thing is until I've kind of vocalized it and realized, hey, wait a minute, this is where I start catching on trying to express myself when just trying to read the story to myself.
Yeah.
And so I definitely do feel that reading out loud and coming back to things can help. Like you mentioned before, like, if you're in a different mood, you can see things in a different way.
Yes. I would imagine having someone else read your story to you would probably be helpful as well. I don't. No one in my life reads my writing or anything. Just online. So I don't know what that would be like. But I also, since you guys do audiobooks, I would assume that going through and reading your stories and kind of feeling the cadence to each sentence would probably be helpful to whoever's going to be doing the audio as well, that you kind of think of that.
it is helpful when audio or when the writing is smooth for the narrators, but we work with some very talented narrators who are able to, generally speaking, catch a flow for themselves, even if some of the writing may be a little bit unusual for them. Like, I wouldn't say that anyone's writing is necessarily awkward, per se, right? But maybe out of the norm for how we might speak for ourselves, right? Even when writing characters, we have characters that totally communicate in different ways from how we would naturally want to communicate or think to communicate. And catching that flow and being able to keep up with that is one of the things that we're really proud to have narrators that we trust and work with that can do that very reliably, even if it's not their natural communication pattern, right?
Yeah. I apologize to whoever has to read Pan and do that. I'm sorry. But I'm sure they can do it. I'm not knocking their talent or anything, but that's a lot of voices to have to do.
It's a lot of characters, but I think that it'll be a fun project for them.
I hope so.
Not to put any spoilers out there on who's doing it or anything, but don't worry about it. Yeah, I want you to be excited about the result, but I'm not going to say much more because we don't do spoilers on the podcast. And instead, I want to talk about a little bit with talking about the process of showing and not telling when setting the scene and kind of bring things back around a little bit to your advice when it comes to scene setting rather than dialogue, but setting the scene and the show and not tell process for that.
Well, like I said, it's your world. You're creating it. So everything you choose to put in there can have meaning if you want it to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to just throw in descriptions of the landscape if it's not gonna propel the characters, because I don't want to lose anybody. I'd say, yeah, I'd like to keep details of setting succinct.
Okay. So your advice to the listeners would be keep it more focused on, okay, here's what I'm going to include and why, rather than just including things for the sake of including them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to knock anyone's process. Take it with a grain of salt, but...
Yeah, when it comes to your process and how you do it, this would be your method of going about it.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Every word counts.
Hmm.
You make every word count. It doesn't have to just be filler.
Okay.
That was something I saw when I was editing, like peer editing other people's stories in college. And actually, something that one of my professors told me was, okay, great story, now cut it in half. Cancels it out. And I'm like, you're kidding, right? And then they go, and then hybridize the two versions.
I'm like, wow. Okay,
I can do that. So you have the rambling, flowery, whatever you started with, and then you've got the bare bones, cut it in half. And you find a happy medium so that it's descriptive and fun to read, but it's also not just a ton of descriptors.
Right. Descriptive. Okay, yeah, that I had never thought of that concept before of cutting it in half, basically stripping it down to the skeleton of sorts, and then, okay, build it back together, but with slightly less.
There's a lot of professors that would say just cut it in half. Like that, I don't want all of this here.
Yeah.
But that one professor, I liked that advice.
Yeah, that resonates with me as well. I have had the experience that you mentioned of the whole, yeah, just cut it in half. This is too much. Just take it all away. I'm like, but I worked so hard for this. There's so much to share. I think that was one of my least favorite things when I was doing writing back in school was there's too much. I was like, but I wrote, this is so nice. There's so much to share. There's so much of the world that I haven't even explored. And you're telling me to do less?
Yeah.
And that kind of self-restraint's really hard for me on the first draft of anything that I write. And I always have to go back through and be like, okay, do I really need to go into this now?
Yeah, you don't have to have restraint for the first draft anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But then going back through, it's still so... it's so painful for me.
It is. I have a story right now that I'm trying to cut down. I have to get rid of 1,000 words.
Oh.
I'm like, what? So I gotta take it out back with a shotgun.
So, you said that you've been writing for a long time, or you've been reading for a long time and telling yourself stories. How long have you been writing for? And how long have you been developing, or when did you start feeling like you have some confidence about showing and not telling? Because you mentioned before that it's not something you had a knack for, it's a learned skill. When did you say you started feeling a bit confident about the skill that you've learned?
confident?
Are you saying you're not confident yet?
I suppose I'm confident about some of my writing skills. Yeah. I have been writing since I was like 7, maybe. And my first story will never, ever see the light of day. But I really got into writing when I was in middle school and high school. Mm-hmm. And I never shared it with anyone. But I had this suitcase, and I would print off everything and just stuff it in the suitcase.
Really?
And just story after poem after book, cram it in the suitcase. And then I took it to college with me. And when I had to write stories, sometimes I would go back and be like, huh, I think I can pluck this from here and this from here. So it helped me as a little launch pad, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But I wrote my first book, quote unquote, when I was 16. Because that was my idea of a fun time for summer vacation. Who goes to the beach?
Hey,
I'm just going to sit in the den with the cat and write a book. and then I wrote another before college. And I always thought that when I grew up, I would be an author. So always been a part of me. And I didn't actually start pursuing trying to get published until this year.
Huh. And so for you, it's been a long process to kind of get comfortable to try and attempt to be published and to pursue this sort of lifelong dream of yours, then.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
I don't know what the catalyst was, but I guess this year I had just this moment where I was like, you know what, that's it. I'm gonna give it a go. I'm gonna actually try to submit to places and see what people think and maybe do this. I have little kids, so I didn't think of it before this, because I think I was just in a state of constant exhaustion. at the age now where they're mostly sleeping through the night. So that's my time to write. I can actually write now. And I'm glad that I made the leap, but I have no idea why I did just this year.
Well, we're certainly glad that you did, because we're at Cinnabar Moth are enjoying your work, as evidenced by the fact we're publishing it, but even aside from that, we've been absolutely loving it. And as a thank you for coming on the Writer's Triangle, I'm aware that you are currently working on a comic series, and so as a thank you, I was just wondering if you could tell us a bit about it, the name if you're querying it, what type of press you're hoping to find for it, that type of thing.
I have a couple projects, but the first one is a graphic novella, like a long one shot, basically, and it has already been accepted with Band of Bards, and it will be published sometime in spring, called The Fell Witch, and it's creepy. So I'm very excited about that. I'm working with Danny Rivera. She's the artist. Mm-hmm. And Miranda Layson is doing colors and letters. And Nicole D'Andrea is the editor. It's my dream team of ladies. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing that story come to life.
Well, we're certainly very excited to see more of your stories come to light as they are revealed to the world and come to life in the form of comics, for the comics that you just, the ones you decide are comic stories and the ones that you write for that. And for now, though, I'd like to thank you, Elise, for talking with us today and being on the Writer's Triangle. And I'd like to thank all of our beautiful moms for listening. And Elise, could you tell the people where they could find you and where they could find the Fell Witch and social media links and the sort?
Follow me on Twitter and Band of Bards. So I am Elise Russell 13 on Twitter, Brave Little Teapot Pot. And then there's Band of Bards. And they will be putting out announcements on their website. I'm going to be doing another project with them, Sentience, that you mentioned at the beginning. So those would be the two places to look. I'm going to be putting together a website at some point, but it's on the list.
Okay. And so, in that case, thank you for coming on today, and be sure for everyone at home to check out these links and visit CinnabarMoth.com to check out the transcripts, and we'll also have the links to Band of the Bards as well as to Elise's Twitter page for you to find there. For now, though, Elise, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much.
And I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.